Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What's up? Welcome back to Barton and Bud. I'm Barton Simmons with Bud Elliott. It's like Black Sunday right now. We're recording, as always, on Sunday evening. The kids are down. The house is quiet. And Gus Malzahn is somewhere counting his money, smoking a cigar, probably relieved that he doesn't have to live in the pressure cooker that is the Auburn football coach any longer. Bud, the coaching carousel finds a way, man. Here we are.
It does, man. It does. And what a weird timing like this year. Normally we have firings well before this. And, you know, we're December 13th. Auburn fires its coach. Wednesday is the early signing period, which you can watch us on CBS HQ for 8 hours. And if you're watching the YouTube version of this, it'll look just like this, except we'll be in a professional studio. I will not be wearing a dry fit shirt. Barton will not be wearing a poncho. We'll probably wear ties, and we'll talk for literally 8 hours on recruiting, which, by the way, dude, and it's on CBS HQ. Make sure you have the CBS HQ app, or you can pull it up on your TV. If you have a smart TV, I mean, you're balling kind of like Gus Malzahn is. You can put it on your smart TV, put it on all the TVs at your work, especially if you're in one of these spots that, you know, you're the only person in the office and you have all these TVs you can put it on. That's really above and beyond. But man, Gus Malzahn is out at Auburn, and we have a lot to discuss. This is Barton and I both like coaching search stuff, not just the rumors, but also the nitty gritty of the why he's out and how good is his job and all kinds of stuff like that. So we think the feedback shows that you guys like when we nerd out on just a topic or two. You know, the no huddle stuff we do is fun, but at the same time, I like being able to deep dive stuff. So we were going to do a little National Signing Day preview. My guess is if you're listening to the show, you follow recruiting and you follow 24/7 sports pretty closely anyway. So just watch us on CBS HQ. We'll definitely do a signing day recap, kind of big lessons show, but we're not going to do the signing day preview. I want to dig into this Auburn thing. So what was your initial take when you saw this come down?
I heard the reports in the weeks prior. Let me clarify here. Maybe 3 to 4 weeks ago, there started to be a little bit of some whispers that Malzahn could be on the hot seat. I don't know that those whispers got to me until maybe a couple weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, maybe even a week and a half. I don't know, like not that long ago. I wasn't paying attention before that. And even once I started hearing those whispers, I was a little bit in disbelief because Gus Malzahn's always on the hot seat. Every year, his job is in jeopardy. Every year, people are frustrated and upset. Every year, people want a little bit more. And so I was like, well, this is just another year that we hear the Gus Malzahn hot seat rumors. And by the way, they're not that bad. They just beat Alabama last year. He's got a $21 million buyout. We're in a pandemic. I don't know. Like, it doesn't, I don't, this is, it probably isn't going to happen. And I did assume that if they lost to Mississippi State, he was probably gone. They beat Mississippi State. Now, it was an ugly game, but they beat Mississippi State. And so I thought, okay, well, that's that. And then I wake up this morning and message boards start popping that Gus Malzahn's gone, or whenever it happened, this afternoon.
And Martin Perino sleeps until 3 o'clock Eastern.
That's right. Yeah. And so, I got to say, I'm a little surprised. And we've talked about this before. This is not me judging Auburn for making this decision. I'm good with it. You guys want to make that play? You know, this is a guy that's had you in the top 15 for about as long as he's been there. They're always competitive. They're always a threat to beat Bama. So it's not going to be easy to find someone better, but I get it. I understand when things have run their course and people are just ready to move on and try something new and see if that's something and just go to door number two and try and hope it's better. So I get it. I feel you. Do you, Auburn? But I was surprised given all of the circumstances.
I was too. I really thought it, you know, just if they beat Mississippi State, they'll probably limp this thing along another year. Do they really want to pay the $10.5 million that is due within 30 days, the poison pill, so to speak, of that contract? And the rest of the deal, the 14 extra million, I mean, over 4 years, that's pocket change, to be real here, to the SEC teams who just got this brand new, you know, SEC game of the year, or will get it rather, deal, you know, with ESPN. But I was a little bit surprised. And so I called around, and I know we both spoke to people today and you know, read a bunch of stuff as well to try to figure out, okay, why now? Like, why did Auburn feel like it had to go now as opposed to letting maybe have a new offensive coordinator Chad Morris have a full offseason or just any kind of offseason as opposed to this COVID offseason to implement his stuff and you know, let Bo Nix have his junior year and that kind of stuff. I think part of this, though, does relate to where they are relative to the best programs, not only on the field, because this year it looked like they didn't really measure up against Bama. Obviously, they lost by 4 scores. And as it was told to me, like, that's never acceptable. We don't want to hear that Nick Saban is the best coach in the history of the sport and that he just does this to everybody. You know, it's like, it's true, but we don't want to hear it. And we don't have to accept, you know, that every time we go to Tuscaloosa, we get blown out. All right, we're 3-5 against Bama under Gus. But, you know, for the most part, the wins are pretty close and the losses are oftentimes really ugly. As were, by the way, a lot of their games this year. I mean, they had a couple of those close wins that, you know, I'm not going to say they didn't deserve to win, but certainly they had some calls go in their favor and whatnot. And so the guy I was talking to was like, look, we can see it. We're falling behind the other programs in our division. You know, we're falling behind Bama. We're a little bit worried about A&M. And then in recruiting, that's where it really is. And I looked it up to see if he was just being emotional or reactionary. And Barton, I actually found some interesting stuff here. Three of Gus's 4 worst recruiting classes will have come in the last 4 years. So there is definitely a trend that Auburn is not recruiting as well as it had been. And if they're worried about the future and they want to kind of nip this thing in the bud, I think that's why they did this. They are not recruiting the state of Georgia as well. They have 0 commits from the state of Georgia. I mean, Auburn is the team that is famous for having the assistant coach tell the player many years ago when the guy was like, hey, coach, I want to stay in state. He was like, well, son, you're in luck. Auburn is in state, in the state of Georgia. You know, so there's a lot of signs there. The recruiting losses, not getting anybody in the state of Georgia this year, kind of reading the tea leaves, and then the very high profile losses, losing out on George Pickens, losing out on a Justin Ross, that type of stuff, and then not recruiting the offensive tackle position and not having a functioning offensive line to allow them to kind of develop a passing game and move beyond some of this wing T stuff. That's kind of the reasons that were given to me. Does it mean I would have made the move? I don't know, but at least that's where the Auburn folks are coming from.
I think one thing that makes sense, like, it's almost like, look, if you know you got a girlfriend, you know you're not in love with her, you know this isn't the girl you're going to marry, like, you don't have to wait for a fight to break up with her. It can just be a normal Saturday, and you can just say, you know what, this isn't going to work. You know, if Auburn decided that this isn't going to work and this is it, and this run its course, falling out of love with old Gus, then I do think it makes sense to, like, not give him a chance to survive again, to not let him get to next season and see, you know, he gets a couple wins. You mentioned they got a couple of the key games at home. And maybe he survives that thing and has another year, and and now you're stuck with a girl you don't love for another year. And so I get that. I also do kind of understand that the strength of that team, and we're going to talk about some potential candidates here in a minute, but the strength of that team has been the defense. Gus Malzahn runs the offense. The offense, doesn't matter what offensive coordinator you shuffle in there and cycle through, the offense looks the same and it continues to look stagnant. And the quarterback development at that program has been abysmal. It's been horrible. Jarrett Stidham got worse. Bo Nix has been steady at best in terms of, like, I don't think he's gotten better. Maybe he hadn't gotten worse, but he hadn't gotten better. And I just think that's, again, I mean, that's on Gus Malzahn. And then you talked about the recruiting, and Georgia's passing you by in recruiting, and Alabama's where it is, and LSU's passing you by, and it's, you know, Florida is going to continue to be, you know, in terms of SEC country, is going to continue to be an issue, a problem. So I get it all. So you got anything else on it, or you want to talk candidates?
Maybe a little more. As far as the timing, the timing was really interesting to me, because I think that just in talking to people, we were pretty sure this was going to happen at some point. I didn't really think it was going to happen this year. And I think these guys, they looked over and they said, okay, Jimbo's probably going to close strong. It's going to be another top five class for A&M, right? We're going to lose more recruiting battles again this year to Clemson. Georgia is going to make another run at number one. They're not going to get there this year, almost certainly, but, you know, like they have sort of kicked into a gear. At some point, we're not going to be able to contend with that unless we also go all in on recruiting, understand how to play that recruiting game, you know, like Bama and Georgia and recently LSU and certainly Jimbo at A&M know how to do. And I think they looked around and said, man, what does our trajectory look like compared to what's happening in Athens and College Station? And, you know, LSU just won a national title, but they're kind of a disaster this year. Like, there's a chance Orgeron's fired after next year, you know, especially with all the, you know, stuff going on in that program. I'm not saying it's going to happen. That's not me reporting that. It's just, I think they're thinking, okay, we could get the jump on everybody here and not continue to backslide. We can create some new excitement. And I think that was missing from this program. And Brandon Marcello, our national columnist for 24/7 national reporter, you know, he wrote a column and said that the thrill is gone, right? Like, there wasn't a whole lot of juice around that Auburn program anymore, especially not on the recruiting trail. Like, they had some good battles with Florida State, but Florida State has not met most of their guys in their recruiting class in person yet this year. Like, they have a new staff. Like, that Auburn people don't want to be beating out Florida State for recruits in the 2021 class. They want to be beating out Georgia and, you know, Alabama and those guys. So that's kind of where it's at. I understand wanting to get the jump, but it's also, this is not a guarantee that it will work, right? They can think in their heads that Gus was going to backslide, but he had a winning SEC record in all but two of his seasons, right? And the most games he ever lost in a year was six in 2015. Other than that, he pretty consistently lost either four or five games, but won, you know, eight, nine, and occasionally 10. I think Auburn would sign up for the Gus experience, you know, 10 times out of 10 if they could take this 8-year stretch again. But I don't know that they would sign up for the next 4 years given the trajectory? Yeah. Trajectory of where this thing is going. That was, I don't know. I thought that was important to figure out. Like, wait, what? Why now? Like, why did you guys feel the need to drop the $10.5 million? Which, by the way, I think they started passing a hat for that back in 2018 to make sure they'd have it when the time came. At least from what I was told.
I think the rest is you mentioned Jimbo Fisher. I would imagine the rest of the SEC West has informed this decision a little bit as well. You got Jimbo Fisher. You mentioned LSU. We know the deal there. They're always going to have a national title ceiling. Alabama, we know the deal there. But now Arkansas is looking like they're going to be a tougher out, looking like they're going to recruit well. Obviously, Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss is making some waves. And so I think there, I could understand the fear of just getting stuck in the mud and feeling like a little urgency to go ahead and make a move while the getting's good. And so, look, in a way, the program's healthy. They've got players. It's just not national title healthy. And I don't think it would be hard to maintain what it is. So you might as well get somebody that can maintain it. And who knows, maybe they take it to the next level.
That's pretty fair, right? Like, can you get somebody else in here to go, you know, 6-4, 5-3, 3-5, 7-1, 5-3, 2-6, 4-4, 7-1 in the SEC? Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not easy, but I don't think it's that difficult to do what Gus Malzahn did at Auburn overall. I mean, maybe getting to a national title game is, you know, I probably wouldn't bet on the next Auburn coach getting there, but like certainly they've won one and they've played for one recently. So it's probably foolish to think that they can't. And I'm just, like you said, I'm not going to fault anybody for trying to chase greatness. And if you got the scratch to do it, go ahead, man. Roll the ball out. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can win another national title at Auburn. Like, there's downside risk in this. It's not guaranteed that you're going to be better than what Gus was. But I think this is a pretty damn good job. And it's going to attract a lot of candidates. I know after the break, we'll go ahead and discuss some of those guys and maybe the potential fit and why Auburn would or would not want them.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
All right, so we are back on Barton and Bud. Really appreciate y'all getting us over 700 reviews. Keep those coming in. Hell, we asked for 700, but maybe we can get to 800 or something by signing day or by New Year's Day or maybe by the national title game. That'd be pretty cool. That surprised both of us. We opened up tonight. I was like, oh, damn. You guys really do love us. That's great. So let's keep that rolling. Barton, how good is this job?
It's an interesting question. It's open-ended. I think it's an elite job. I think it's a top. I don't know. It can get. It's a job that's going to pay. It's a job that's going to give you resources. It's a job that is, you know, wants to be big boy ball. And I think it'll do what it has to do to get there. But it is hard. I mean, you are judged against Nick Saban, and I don't like. Indefinitely. Like, the idea that Nick Saban is going to be gone in the next 5 years is just that's hoping. I don't know that there's any reason to believe that that's true. And so I think it is in terms of just like jobs that for the competitors, this is one of the best because it's a job where you're going to have a chance to prove yourself against the best. It's the best conference, the best division against the best coach in college football. So I think it's really it. So it's going to attract big fish. But I think, look, when Auburn makes this move, they have to have a pretty good sense. I mean, they're not paying $21 million without a decent sense of who they're going to target. And so to me, there are some obvious names. From my perspective, the name that is just like punching me in the face, and you may not agree with this. I think you at least understand it, is Hugh Freeze. I mean, Hugh Freeze has Alabama skins on the wall. He can coach offense. He can develop the quarterback position. He's sitting there he's turned Malik Willis, the guy Bo Nix, you know, Malik Willis under Gus Malzahn didn't even sniff beating Bo Nix out for the job. And he is now one of the best group of five quarterbacks in the country for Liberty. And he has recruited at a high level. Now he has cheated. I mean, like that's been proven by the NCAA. Like they're paying for guys hotels and stuff like that. That's so there is that. But I think the idea that Hugh Freeze could come in and just sort of be the, you know, the lightning rod that that program needs is pretty tempting.
I completely get why you immediately go to Hugh Freeze. I kind of thought so too. And I, in some ways, I still do. Beating Nick Saban, which is crazy because you just fired the guy who had the best record against Nick Saban of anybody in the entire SEC, right? But at least Hugh Freeze, yeah, he does have, you know, multiple victories over Nick Saban. If you're Auburn, let's just be real clear about this and not sugarcoat it. If you're Auburn and you make this move to fire Gus Malzahn, you are saying that you want to be all in on recruiting, right? That means you're not against paying for recruits' hotel rooms. You are recruiting against Georgia and Bama and the other schools that play for keeps in recruiting. So none of this little old Auburn on the plains thing, right? None of this just having one coach on the staff who knows how to, you know, bend the rules and go and get a guy and maybe make sure, you know, if mom needs a new set of wheels or something, you know, like you need the entire staff moving in the right direction. You need to know how to do this. Hugh Freeze pulled Laramie Tunzel out of Central Florida. You got to drive by Gainesville. You got to drive by Tallahassee. You got to be, even though he was silently committed to Georgia, didn't get him there in that living room. You got to go past Auburn. You got to go past, you know, kind of past Alabama. You could hang a left on I-10 and go to LSU, you know, go down to LSU. That's the kind of battles that in firing Gus Malzahn, Auburn is saying we want to fight and win. Hugh Freeze knows how to do that. You may not like the methods, but I mean, let's be real. That's kind of what it takes, especially if you're at Auburn. That's what it takes. You need to get, like, really relationships and family, I think, are probably the real keys to the recruiting here if you're going to make this happen. At Auburn, Hugh Freeze is, you know, certainly a relationship and family guy. Now, he also, like you said, the offense. I get that point too. But there are some negatives that I don't know that Hugh Freeze is a perfect fit for Auburn. And these aren't ones I came up with. It's just talk to some folks today. Number one, obviously, you know, texting escorts. That's not a great look, obviously, for a school at Auburn that is, it's not a Christian university, but it's very tied in with FCA and Christianity and whatnot. Like that's kind of a foundational piece of their program. I think in some ways that's why Malzahn was a good fit there for a long time. They also, a lot of the power players at Auburn were around during the Terry Bowden thing, which just Google it if you guys want all the details on that. But texting escorts, given Auburn's history with head coaches, doesn't really jive super well. Auburn also just got rid of a guy in Malzahn who was a high school coach at one point. Like he's kind of in that high school tree of coaches. He wrote the book on the hurry up, no huddle spread. You know, Hugh Freeze and him are kind of off a similar tree. And like, I don't know if they want to go down that high school offensive guru road again. Although I think that's silly because if you're complaining about the offense, hiring a guy who is good at offense is not a bad thing, in my opinion. Like I would not personally, I think that this criticism here is kind of silly, but this is something I got back from Auburn people. They're like, wait, you know, he's kind of one of these high school offensive gurus. Will this really work in the SEC? I'm like, yes, it will. It literally worked one state over at Ole Miss. I also got told that he would get an interview pretty much no matter what, because of the Jimmy Sexton, you know, Hugh Freeze rehab tour, and that it would make him more palatable for an SEC school to hire him like Tennessee next year. That's kind of what I got, the feedback I got on Hugh Freeze. But I think Hugh Freeze would do well at Auburn. And you got to play for keeps if you're going to fire Gus Malzahn. There's really only one way to go here. Like you're trying to chase that 10th and 11th win a year. You're not firing Gus and giving him 20 mil to not coach to go 8-4, 9-3 again.
in addition to Freeze, among the names, there's plenty of names that have been bandied about. I think the other three that really kind of make sense to me are Billy Napier. You know, that was the immediate talking point. Was like, everyone's like, well, wonder why Billy Napier walked away from South Carolina. Maybe he saw the writing on the wall over here.
Allegedly. South Carolina people will tell you that Ed Beamer was the number one choice, clearly, over everybody.
Depends on who you ask. So then I think Napier's certainly a candidate. He can recruit. He's done the Bama thing. He's done the Clemson thing. He's an offensive guy. He's you know, they've had success at Louisiana, obviously. So then there's Mario Cristobal, if recruiting is your main issue with Gus Malzahn, if you just are just irked by the fact he couldn't consistently recruit above like the like not 8 to 12 range in recruiting, well, I can about guarantee you that Mario Cristobal can come in here and get Auburn recruiting in the top 5. I feel pretty confident saying that. I feel like some of these sort of periphery, I mean, like that's trouble for like an A&M. That's just sort of knocking on the top 5 door consistently, but isn't going to do it every year right now under Jimbo Fisher. Like Mario Cristobal wasn't going to come in here and do that. They could supplant LSU. I could see them as a, from a recruiting standpoint, as like that maybe number 3 team, number 4 team behind Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia. So that makes sense to me. And then the other one that makes sense, that the more I think about it, the more I kind of like it, is and you mentioned him before we jumped on here, but Kevin Steele, the defensive coordinator. I know that probably sounds uninspiring to a lot of people, but the defense has been the strength. The defensive staff is pretty loaded. The Kevin Steele has been literally the like director of player personnel at Alabama when he's not. When he's not a defensive coordinator, he's been Nick Saban's recruiting guy. He knows how to recruit. And I could see that working. I could see that being the Sam Pittman hire or whatever of this cycle.
Yeah. And he's been a head coach before, obviously a long time ago. It didn't work out. He was the head coach at
Baylor.
And look, at the time, nobody was winning at that program.
Mm-hmm.
So with Napier first, obviously, you know Napier a little bit better than I do. He's done a tremendous job at Louisiana. I think one of the selling points for him is that he is not an offensive system guy. There is some distaste at Auburn, I believe, for the guys who have their system, right? Which I guess to some extent that's Freeze. Certainly that's Gus. If you write a book on the offense you run, I think we can classify that kind of as a system. He's adapted his offense to run pretty much whatever the talent they had there at Louisiana. It's typically a pretty good offense. He's an excellent recruiter. I think he's a very innovative coach. And, man, he might have played his hand here just tremendously. Although, I feel like every time Billy Napier says no to a job, a better SEC job opens up. Like, if he tells Auburn no, maybe LSU will open up tomorrow. And then, like, at that point, I think he needs to cash in the chips. Like, if LSU opens and Napier's already been recruiting in Louisiana, he needs to go ahead and take that, in my opinion. Napier could be a good fit. Let me ask you this. Do you know any Pac-12 coaches who do not complain to you about the way Cristobal recruits out there?
Yeah, he's shaking things up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In a good way for Oregon, though. In a way that you like if you're Auburn. Like, he knows how the game is played. He is an excellent recruiter. I mean, he is just on these guys, and like recruiting is not just something that these guys do after they coach. Like, it is on equal footing with the coaching in that program. And some, like, just to behind the scenes. So some staffs are allowed to make their recruiting calls from home, right? Some staffs, like the coaches are that fanatical that they make them stay in the building to make their recruiting calls. I know when Jimbo got to Florida State, that was a thing. That one of the messages was that he was going to allow his guys to make their recruiting calls from home, which was a change from the guy he used to work under. Obviously, Saban's had a ton of success, and I'm pretty sure Bama's guys do not have to stay in the building anymore. But like that level of just kind of being on the folks who are under you to emphasize the importance of recruiting, that's there with Cristobal. Like anybody you talk to who's around him says he is an absolute maniac about talent acquisition. He understands how you got to get players. And I could see that working out there. I could also see, you know, them being Auburn being pretty happy to steal away a guy who, you know, at least some think is the guy who Auburn eventually has, you know, kind of bookmarked to be Saban's replacement. I don't know if I agree with that, but it's certainly been bandied about. That would probably play pretty well there. And, you know, he could get talent out of South Florida as well, given all his connections down there. But Steele, man, that is an interesting one. When that guy floated to me today, I was like, okay, you got to sell me on this. What you're going to fire Gus, you're going to pay $20 million to promote Kevin Steele. And he's like, look, I know this sounds crazy, but you don't have to have a whole lot of head coaching experience to be successful, which we both agree with. Like the recent data shows that that's true. He's endeared himself very well to Auburn power players. He basically runs that side of the ball. Like Gus was extremely hands-off with the defense. And from people I've talked to, like they were very impressed with the job Kevin did, not only on the field, but like just running his own side of the ball organizationally and how he manages his coaches and his staff. And obviously he's an excellent recruiter and the guys underneath him are as well. How old is Steele? 62.
Getting up there a little bit. Is he that old?
So he's 62. He'll be 63 come March. How old is Nick Saban? I mean, like the guy.
I mean,
the
Kevin Steele thing that makes me think that if you're going Kevin Steele, like you're almost going him as a precursor to like someone else you're grooming. Like you almost have to think two moves in advance there almost.
So there is a guy on their staff. I want to actually make sure I got this right. Oh, Travis Williams.
Yeah.
Co-DC. Like they love Travis Williams there. But he's also on defense. So like I think if you go Kevin Steele, that's kind of a hard sell to me a little bit because of the age thing. But I mean, you could get 6-7 good years out of him for sure if you wanted. And then he would just need to go get somebody on offense who really knows what they're doing and make sure that cupboard is stocked on the offensive side of the ball with talent there. But I could see it. Like it's not as crazy to me as I think. Any of these four guys we mentioned, actually, I could see being there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Do you want to touch on a couple of the other stuff that's popping out there? You have more thoughts on Auburn?
I'm pretty much done with Auburn. Just want to run down two things. Number one, I don't think Lane Kiffin is a great fit in Auburn, despite the fact he would be an incredible antagonist to like. Can you imagine Saban's reaction if he has to deal with like Kiffin's comments on Feinbaum about Bama every single week? Like that would be,
dude, it would be awesome. It would be awesome. I mean, sorry, old Miss. I know you guys love him.
To like solely to like Luke and Jamie would be like they run our desk. Would be like, all right, you are on Kiffin duty today, like solely every day. Like all right, who's got the Kiffin? Me today. All right, it would be awesome. Like we would do so many clicks off that,
and it would just be such a fantastic Kiffin move to be like 1 year old Miss. Peace. I'm out.
Somebody also, Ole Miss Auburn rivalry would go absolutely insane because you remember the last guy at Ole Miss to peace out was Tommy Tuberville saying they're gonna have to drag me out of here in a pine box. And the next day he takes the Auburn job. So man, coaches used to say stuff like a lot more just wild stuff before things would go viral. You know, now they're a little more guarded with their words. Some of these old timey quotes are just fantastic. Matt Campbell, last thing on Auburn here. I don't get the sense that he wants to recruit in the SEC and get into all that. And also, Auburn has kind of a weird relationship with Iowa State right now. Gene Chizik was from Iowa State. They look at that tenure as largely a failure. I believe it was their president who they got from Iowa State, who they had to run off. So probably not going to go back to the Cyclones well if you're Auburn here. Not that he would take it. I don't think he would.
Illinois. Lovie Smith. You know, just he tempted us a little bit with some decent recruiting at times, some decent defense at times. Never could get over the hump. he's gone. I feel like there are some very distinct candidates that make sense at Illinois. Lance Leipold makes a ton of sense at Buffalo. Jeff Monken at Army makes a ton of sense. Josh Whitman, their athletic director, is kind of a Wisconsin guy. He's a Barry Alvarez guy. So Jim Leonard is a name that might pop up in that search. Those are sort of the ones that immediately, because Monken's from Illinois originally, and Leipold is just your quintessential sort of Midwestern success story. We talked about him before. So I'll be really curious how that plays out. There's no search firm there. I would imagine they will move pretty quickly. One thing that I think is interesting, because I've been talking to some coaches today, and I've had, so Jeff Monken is an interesting one because he's still in the Vanderbilt search. As far as we know, he's still hanging around there. I think Leipold's hanging around there as well, along with Clark Lee. And there's this idea that Jeff Monken would come in and he'd be boring and he can't recruit. And one of the things that's been debunked emphatically by, I would say, at least three different people I've talked to now have said this about Jeff Monken, is he's a maniac from a recruiting standpoint.
Oh yeah.
Like he flat gets after it from a recruiting standpoint. Like you talk about, like, you know, holding people accountable for their recruiting calls or whatever. Like he'll just get up there straight up in a meeting room, you know, and put everybody's call logs up on the big screen and be like, coach, like, you know, just literally call coaches out one by one. And just like, he will absolutely ride those guys to make sure that they are, at least from an effort standpoint, crushing it recruiting. And so no one's going to know that, because Army is only recruiting service academy players. They're not beating Northwestern and Maryland on guys. They're beating Air Force and Navy. And so, you know, what's his offense going to look like? I don't know. But I do think he would be able to recruit. I do think he can team build. And I think that that's a pretty good candidates list, because I have tremendous confidence in Lance Leipold as well. And, you know, the Jim Leonard thing is interesting. So I don't know who else is going to pop up on that list, but those would be the initial three that come to mind. And at least of the two that I've got sort of enough info on to feel like I'm informed on, I feel like they'd be really good hires.
So I'm looking back here. It's important to kind of figure out what defines success at a program like Illinois. What one of the things I think we both like with Kentucky is Kentucky and Mark Stoops have agreed on what is success. All right, if you hit this, we're going to reward you with a guaranteed contract extension. If Illinois was drawing up a Mark Stoops style contract, what does that look like? What is the number of wins in a year that gets you an automatic 1-year extension? I'm kind of curious here. Like, what defines success for them? And so a bowl. Okay.
That would be my initial inclination. Just get us to 500, get us in a bowl. If we go 6-7 indefinitely, then yeah, like at some point maybe you've plateaued and sure, it's time to level up to something better. But if you go 6-7 for 5 years, that's a pretty good 5-year stretch. You get into bowl games every year. You're winning some games you're not supposed to. I feel like that would be success.
That's fair. So since 2000, we've had 22 seasons, including this one, right? They've gone to 6 bowls. Now, I'm not saying they can't go to bowls, you know, more often than they have. In fact, I think the right coach probably could take them to, you know, more bowls than they had. I don't really think Ron Zook was a good head football coach. Tim Beckman went 8-4 twice at Toledo and somehow got hired and then got fired for, you know, allegations of player abuse. You know, Lovie Smith, I think, was doing some good things, but also, man, at times they were just kind of a mess. It's hard for me to think that this program has been really well coached for a long stretch of time. You know, John Makovic in the late 80s went to 4 bowls. That's, you know, that's pretty impressive. Ron Turner, they went to 2 bowls, actually, including the Sugar Bowl that 1 year just out of nowhere, right? It went 2-6 in the Big Ten the year prior. And then all of a sudden, 2001, they went to the Sugar Bowl and lost to LSU, I think, was the team they lost to. I'm trying to remember back in the day. So the thing is, if you're the AD at Illinois, he's kind of a guy that wants to be splashy and make a big splash and go out and get somebody. I don't know how much you follow college basketball, but he actually got Oklahoma State's coach.
Yeah.
And that was considered a pretty impressive thing. At least I don't follow college basketball closely, but from what I read, I was like, okay. And then getting Lovie Smith, I think it was a big splash in terms of name quality. If you're an AD and you hire a coach that currently runs the triple, you are admitting to your boosters a little bit that we have a ceiling on this program, which I think it should be obvious to anybody who's smart enough to amass any kind of money in life. They might want to donate some of that money to Illinois. They should probably realize, oh, so we're not going to win a national title in Illinois? Oh, man, like, I'm not going to donate. No, like, you should say, okay, wait a second, this is cool. Let me try to get some bowl games more often than not. I think Illinois should look at a guy like Munkin. I just don't know that they will. All those candidates you listed, I think, are really good candidates and could do well there, especially if Illinois is willing to be patient.
What else we got? Butch Jones.
We got Arizona.
Oh, Arizona. That one's a weird one for me. I don't think I have a good feel for who here's what I do know. Arizona's mistake was made the last coaching search when they backed out on Ken Niumatalolo, especially when we were about to get Ken Niumatalolo with Khalil Tate at quarterback. I know that, like, everyone, it's one of those deals where if you are the school that is hiring the triple option coach, you don't want them. If everyone else wants that school to hire the triple option coach. So I get it. Maybe Arizona doesn't want that, but I think that would be fun. Brent Brennan to San Jose State appears to be a quality candidate. I would imagine Jay Norvell is a good candidate there as well at Nevada. And I keep seeing Ryan Nielsen's name floating around with that one, who's a former assistant in the Pac-12, who's currently with the Saints as their defensive line coach, the NC State guy, yeah, that developed Bradley Chubb and all those NFL guys. So I guess he's a West Coast guy, and he has a fantastic reputation. I don't know how legit that is for him to be a true candidate for that Arizona job, but he's a couple different people have tossed his name out. I thought that was interesting.
The Arizona job is a job, like, if you look at it, they usually are pretty patient with their coaches. I mean, they don't have crazy boosters. You know, they gave Mike Stoops 8 years, and Rich Rod went 6 years and went to a bowl in 5 of the 6. Obviously there was a lot of stuff related to, you know, his firing, and it was, you know, off field type stuff. Kevin Sumlin should have sat out a year of coaching.
Yeah.
After A&M.
Why do these guys insist on doing this?
I think, like, you know, he should have just regrouped a little bit, you know, and you know, kind of worked on some stuff and then got himself back out there. But this did not go well. I will tell you, it talking to my friend Richard Johnson, he says that, you know, he first of all agrees that someone should have set out. He said, but, like, the fear sometimes of some of these African-American coaches is that if they're out of the limelight for even a little bit, they will not get another shot at getting back in the head coaching game. So if they get any kind of interest at all, they feel more pressure to take it. And that, you know, I've never been a head coach, but I've certainly never been a black head coach. And so I really can't speak to that, but, you know, I know Richard's pretty plugged in there, so I'll take his word for it. I think someone should have sat out. This is a pretty damn good, like, I think this is a good job based on the fact they can go to bowls pretty consistently, but, man, I don't know. Herm is doing a good job there at Arizona State. I believe, I don't think they're going to start winning the league, but, you know, he's doing a good job there. It's not like your talent base in Arizona is all that great. I don't think they're going to have the success that Dick Tomey had, you know, in the late 80s and, you know, all the way to 2000. It's kind of hard for me to think they're going to do the same thing that Rich Rod did. I mean, They played in the Fiesta Bowl 1 year, which I don't even remember now, but you know, that can you go to bowl games 2 out of every 3 years? Is that success at Arizona? If so, I think the number of candidates you have here is probably pretty good. And the guy at San Jose State is doing a really nice job.
I think part of the reason
I'm not excited about this job.
I think part of the reason there's some intrigue there is there's still some talent in Arizona. And I think that there's wins in the Pac-12. It's part of the same reason that all these ACC jobs are appealing to coaches. Cause you can get some wins in the Big 12.
That's fair.
I mean, I'm sorry. In the ACC, you can get some wins in the ACC. And so I don't know, man, like we've seen Arizona be really, really good. Maybe it's been a while, but there's been some times when that's been, it's been a pretty good show out there.
Does this excite you then? It sounds like you're a little higher on this job than I am.
I am a little higher on this job than you are. And yet I still don't know necessarily like that there's any sexy names that would be jumping at this. I just think maybe that's the nature of just the West Coast, not really having any sexy names right now at all. But I think this is, I think this is a job that's got a little bit of potential.
By the way, speaking of West Coast stuff, a guy who I actually think might really be able to kill it at Auburn, a dude who has coached in the SEC before, but you know, I think is a really, really good coach. They won't do this, but I would be interested to see Justin Wilcox there.
Yeah, he'd be good. He's a good coach.
I mean,
and that feels like Cal is like, that just doesn't seem like a fun place to coach.
No.
Seems like you got a lot of obstacles at that program.
Just nonsense every day you got to deal with from, you know, academia and the local side of things. And yeah, mm-hmm. He was at he was Tennessee's DC for like 4 years.
He's had a weird little run. I mean, he's been
Boise's DC, then Tennessee, Boise, USC
Washington,
for 2 years.
Wisconsin. He came from Wisconsin. But yeah, like there was a stretch in there where he was a little bit, he went from like hot name to, then he was hot again. Like, so it's been hard to kind of peg him. But he is a guy that frankly I didn't think was going to be a good head coach. I didn't necessarily get that hire, but he's been good. He's been really good.
Yeah, I'm pretty impressed, and just hearing people who are out there on the West Coast talk about him, I'm like, man, I wonder if he wants to come back east and do that, but probably not. All right, are we going to have any other jobs open?
I've heard a little bit of Cutcliffe retirement buzz.
Okay.
I don't know how legit that is, but that I've heard that from this more kind of coaches eye and jobs that are like potentially going to come open. I've heard a couple different coaches have mentioned to me, kind of keep an eye on Duke. Something could happen there. And I guess Virginia Tech, I don't know if Justin Fuente's out of the woods yet. Those are the two big ones that come to mind for me.
Speaking of Virginia Tech, I actually did have somebody today float to me that Gus will take a year off and then the Hokies could be a good landing spot for him next year.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know
if they want to make a bigger
Virginia
splash
Tech to than hire that. Someone better than that.
Yeah.
Then the other one, you know, the other one that's sort of getting a little bit of buzz and it kind of came out of left field. I didn't necessarily see this coming, but it seems like there's a little smoke around Texas Tech right now.
Yeah, they're not happy with him.
Yeah,
apparently.
That's, yeah. So
I don't want to do the thing where I tell a program like you should be happy with this guy. What are you thinking? Right, like they're going to be a better judge of it usually than I will because I'm not inside their program like that. But 2 years feels very short, man. It does. Like I know they had that struggle bus win against Kansas, and that's not a great sign, but. 2 years, one of them being a COVID year, I really think patience is extremely important in the early signing period era. I mean, like the returns on these coaches who were hired in this era, you know, since we started the early signing period, if you're not an internal promotion, man, your track record so far has been pretty bad across the board. And I think a lot of that is because you Like, you're so far behind on the first full class you're going to sign. You're obviously behind on the class that you're only going to have like 10 or 12 days to put together in a given year. It's just, you kind of have to build through proof of concept and winning as opposed to, you know, drumming up all that excitement, right? Like the success for a new coach in the early signing period era now, I'm not going to say this is universal, but this, it might look more like what Dan Mullen has done at Florida, right? They didn't get a whole lot of recruiting excitement around them in those first, you know, two classes. He's doing better now recruiting because they have more proof of concept. It used to be you come in, you recruit your ass off. People, like, teams did not recruit that far out ahead. They didn't almost have, you know, half of their mock class filled out on their board 18 months ahead of time. And they didn't already have all these relationships done and locked up, and use a lot of that hype and the that momentum to kind of get those awesome classes. And then you won in year three, four, or five. Now I think it's a little bit longer timeline. And I don't know that teams that just keep recycling through coaches like this are going to find the right recipe for success. But who knows? Maybe there's stuff there at Texas Tech that I don't know about. Certainly there is.
Yeah, that's a weird job.
That's a tough job, man. Like,
it is a tough job.
Pull that up there on Google Maps at home or in your office. That is not near anything.
Lubbock, like recruiting, like Houston, that's not in-state recruiting. That's like, you're basically going to a different, like, you're, that ain't exactly a clean and easy drive. So it's an interesting job.
Do you think they fly kids from Houston on officials?
They might.
I mean, like,
probably,
that
they probably do. Yeah,
you can pay for it. Like, it takes. What's the drive from Houston?
I'm gonna look it up. Houston to Lubbock, 8 hours and 6 minutes. That's a beast right there.
I mean, like, if you look at this, the city is Lubbock closer to Tucson than it is Houston? On my map, it looks kinda,
like it.
Kind of close, man. I mean, that's amazing. It's certainly closer to Albuquerque.
It's nine hours and 40 minutes to Tucson.
That might just because there's no road that cuts directly
right,
to the desert.
Right. Like, you kind of got to go a little bit off the beaten path there.
That's a hard job. That is I wonder how much their success in basketball has made them think, hey, like, why can't we do this in football as well? You know, because their basketball guy is incredible.
I heard that they just like their. Someone told me today their admin just not happy with Wells, and I don't even really know what that means or why. Or I mean, I guess there's not. I don't know. Maybe there's not winning enough, but I don't know. It sounds like it may not be a fit right now.
There was a columnist down there actually who suggested they hire Art Briles. So.
Yeah, Art Briles is getting some Liberty buzz.
He is, man. That's does Liberty want that kind of buzz, given that they already have that AD? Do they want to reunite that pairing? You know what I mean?
They don't give a rip.
Yeah,
that's their whole existence is just like to give the proverbial middle finger to everyone and be like, we're good. Y'all do you.
I think you nailed it. You really nailed it. So in order to win at Texas Tech, I really think the major key here is that you have to find a way to get more talent to the city of Amarillo. If you can do that, I mean, that is like, there's no other football program around there. You can totally clean up.
Get that El Paso talent.
Oh, shout out New Mexico, by the way, for getting the win over Fresno on the weekend. I know Fresno was probably a little bit unmotivated given the fact they weren't allowed in their facility for a while and just kind of one of those zombie teams a little bit, but good job, New Mexico, getting that win. That was impressive. Texas Tech is 70th in recruiting right now.
Yeah.
Not great.
They only have 11 commits. It's interesting. There's a lot of teams with the low commit number right now.
Is the state of New Mexico playing high school ball this year, or are they waiting?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Not that Texas Tech is getting all their kids from New Mexico, but certainly, I mean, the states that are waiting, I think you are going to see some schools that have a little bit fewer commits, Yeah, there are some really low numbers on this. I think part of this is going to be, you know, do the schools wanting to save some spots for transfers? You know, Penn State's only at 15.
I saw that. Yeah.
You know, Washington's at 15. I get that. Certainly Florida State's at 15. They're probably going to lose another guy or two out their class. Maybe they'll gain a guy or two. They're probably going to benefit. Actually, we want to talk recruiting. George Wilson, who was decommitted from South Carolina, he was looking at Auburn pretty hard, but maybe not quite as much. Now
Auburn was about to get Terrence Brooks, Trevin Wallace, George Lewis, Wilson. Yeah. What did I say? Did I say Terrence
Lewis? Brooks?
Yeah. Sorry, yeah, Terrence Lewis. And now those guys, I don't know if they can get any of those guys.
There's some Maryland buzz with Terrence Lewis. That would be an extremely, extremely Terrence Lewis thing to do, by the way. Like just out of nowhere. But Loxley's good for one a year, basically. Just one. Where the hell did that come? By the way, I'm going to have a mea culpa on that one. You won the bet. We need to go pull whatever episode this was. We had a bet as for how many days Robinson, the high four-star defensive end, would stay committed to Maryland. And he's still in the class. So
you had him bouncing?
I had the under that. And you had the over, like one of our first episodes.
Damian Robinson. Yeah. I think he's a DMVer, man.
He's locked in.
Mike Loxley building that wall around the DMV.
They struggled a little bit this weekend. I don't know what was up with Talia. But you know, that was tough. They lost to Rutgers. Not great. Speaking of over Army, I actually won an under bet in that game, despite the fact that it went to overtime. That's always satisfying. Like when you win an under in a college game that goes to overtime.
That's a good feeling. I get it.
That was difficult to watch.
I understand the sensation. It feels better to win an over bet when it goes to overtime, though.
Oh.
Having lost in regulation, get into those extra minutes, and you get that over. That's a beautiful feeling.
And you start doing your head like, wait, do I want to kick a field goal here? Do I want a touchdown? Because if I get the touchdown, but like field goal, it depends on how many points you need. Like if you get the field goal, there's a decent chance the other side plays a little more conservative and they get the field goal. And then, you know, then you get 6 points plus the second overtime. Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
All right. We are just absolutely rambling here. We've gone an hour. Cool. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Get some sleep.
By the way, we need to figure out a recording schedule for Wednesday. Because we're probably not going to be doing a Bart and Bud live on CUSHQ. I'm thinking we probably don't.
Yeah, don't count on Bart and Bud on Wednesday, folks. We'll be talked out. Maybe a Thursday recap show.
Maybe a couple of mailbag questions about recruiting for Thursday.
Sure. So,
or Friday, and we'll drop it on. You can listen to it the weekend before Christmas. So hit them up. Mailbag, Apple Podcasts, 5-star review section. Do it. We'll see you guys.
Has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.